Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Triangulation, episode 242, recorded for Monday, March 21st, 2016. Sphero. Triangulation is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a landing page or beautiful website for your portfolio, blog, or online store. Enter the offer code TRIANGULATION to get 10% off. Squarespace, you should. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost, automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/triangulation to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's wealthfront.com/triangulation. And by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those who have money to lend. Visit prosper.com/triangulation to apply for a loan now.
It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get together with some of the most interesting people in technology, spend some time talking with them, and I'm really excited about this one because, I've been a fan of Sphero for some time. And now Sphero, you know, the world knows because of BB-8. Welcome to Ian Bernstein. He is, are you one of the founders, aren't you, of Sphero?
Yep.
Tell me about the story of Sphero. How did it get started? CTO right now. So that means you kind of know how it works.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, I built robots since I was a kid, like 12
really?
Years old.
Like what? Like, tell me.
So.
By the way, this was only 10 years ago, practically.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, it was a little while
Ian
ago.
Ian was telling me he watched The Screensavers when he was a young
I did.
Person.
Yeah, yeah. We kind of grew up in the middle of nowhere. We didn't have, we didn't have TV. So my grandmother lived like an hour away, and that's where we go to like get groceries and stuff like that. My dad would record them on, VHS tapes. Like,
bring them home.
Yeah, like every week.
Where did you live?
I grew up in like sort of northern New Mexico.
Uh-huh. In the hills or kind
of? It's kind of right along like the Front Range. So, one way it's just flat.
Beautiful.
And the other way it's mountains.
And your parents moved there to get you away from the internet?
No, we actually had like fairly good internet.
Oh, okay.
Just like the cooperative in that area had actually put in DSL, and it wasn't very fast, but we did have internet like pretty early, yeah.
But no TV.
No.
Was it a good place to grow up?
I mean, there wasn't like anything to do, so I just like sat around and like built robots all day and sat on the internet.
Thank your parents for boring you to tears, so you had to do something. Yeah. How did you? So this is what, late 90s, early mid 90s?
Yeah. Yep.
So what robots were out there? I mean, what did you do? Did you get kits?
Yeah, so ever since I can remember, I remember I was probably 4 or 5 years old. I had this like cardboard box of parts. Like, I'd taken apart broken cameras and cassette players
So this is in your blood.
Yeah, I couldn't like do anything with them. And then I actually started homeschooling. And then I think when I was about 11... my dad's a classical guitarist, and he wanted to get into digital music recording. And we went to, the computer club, and it was, bulletin board systems and, all that kind of stuff back then. He ended up meeting this guy that taught electronics at a tech school, and they worked out a trade. So he would teach this guy guitar lessons in exchange for him teaching me about electronics.
Fantastic.
So learned about, resistors and capacitors and stuff like that. And just sort of a few months in, he showed me this flyer for this Beam Robotics Games. So it's sort of this analog-based robotics developed by this guy, Mark Tilden, that used to work at Los Alamos National Labs. We decided to check it out the first day, and it turned out they had a workshop as part of the competition, and I ended up building my first robot and went, every day of the event and, ended up building, three different robots, and I was just, totally hooked after that.
That is so cool. Yeah, Tilden's kind of a legend in this whole thing. Early robotics guy.
Yep. Still good friends.
And you competed in the games? Did you play?
I don't know if I competed that year, but I went on future years. Like they had one in India in 1995, I think. 1998, that I had the chance to go to and competed. And
his early robots, these early robots like this bug, remind me a little bit of the Boston Dynamics walking robots, the dogs and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a really cool technology.
Yeah, yeah. But these are analog.
Yep. Yeah, they're not.
It's all actuators. And
yeah, it's not programmable. So yeah. You get a lot of interesting responses. sort of emergent behavior comes out of these.
Yeah,
things.
It's kind of a little creepy too sometimes, right?
Yep.
Because they seem almost alive.
Yeah, very yeah. much.
Yeah, they remind me of the Brevwalker software where it would start very ungainly but learn to walk over a long period of time. I used to run that as a screensaver for my kids, and they would watch it. They loved it because yep. they'd love to see how ungainly it was, and that would slowly was learning.
Yep, they really do.
Yeah. So did you, that's cool. So did you learn music too? I mean, did your dad make you play guitar too? Or?
I think he wanted me to. But, yeah, I was actually talking about this last night with somebody. Just, I'm appreciating it now, but, like, you know,
at
back
the time,
then, I mean, he practiced probably 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
And when you hear, like, the same five seconds of the song over and over, you just, like, you want, like, nothing to do with that.
I know how it is. My dad's a geologist. I couldn't stand the sight of a hand lens and a pick for years. No, I think there's a real reason I ask is there's often, I think, a connection between musicians and computer scientists. There's this, it's the same part of the brain, I think. Mm-hmm. The mathematical mind, it turns out, is very similar to the musical mind. So you inherited that.
Yeah, probably more on like the art side. Like
interesting.
I like that side of it.
Yeah. Did you go to school in robotics?
Yeah, I went on to study electrical engineering, computer mm-hmm. science.
Where'd you go?
So I went 3.5 years at New Mexico Tech,
mm-hmm.
and then kind of backpacked around Mexico for a semester, nice. And then transferred to Colorado State, and then I dropped out to kind of learn about business. And
interesting.
Still.
Did you think that you were going to do a robotics business?
Not really. So I did web design for 4 years, and I worked part-time at a robotics company to kind of keep my engineering
uh-huh.
fresh and, yeah, no, I mean, especially doing all the web design stuff, I had a lot of, you know, working with clients and working in that industry, I had a lot of more internet company ideas.
It's good you got those skills, too, though. That's really, instead of just in the labs
yep.
tinkering.
Yeah.
Tell me about software versus hardware. It seems like sometimes there's a wall between the two, but you combine both.
Yeah, we do combine both.
Software's pretty important, I think, in these things.
Yeah, it's extremely important. Yeah. I mean, you know, when you look at our products, obviously the hardware part is extremely important. It's important for the experience to take advantage of having this hardware piece and the software piece. But really, like, these things are 95% software, both the software that's running in the robot itself and the software that's, you know, interacting with it on the phone side. And we're able to, you know, change the experience, like, you know, even like BB-8, you know, your experience with our new BB-8 robot today might be completely different than the experience you'll have with that exact same robot that you bought today
right.
a year from now.
Right.
So we can evolve the experience on the software side.
I think I first saw you at, seems like CES, and then immediately after at Macworld.
Mm-hmm.
You had an arena set up, and you had the Spheros, and they were playing different games and so forth. But before this was Sphero, it was Orbotics.
Yep.
You and your partner, Adam Wilson, started this together. Tell me how that got started.
So sort of like late 2009, I was working at this robotics company, and we were selling robots. We're doing R&D. We're selling them mostly to like universities and research labs and places like that. And
what kind of robots?
So we had little humanoid robots, mm-hmm. about maybe a foot, foot and a half tall. We had a lot of robots that had a bunch of sensors that were people were studying swarm behaviors. So they
Isn't
buy
that
hundreds
interesting?
Of these things.
Yeah, because they have to be aware of the other robot and they act in concert, but also individually. That's a fascinating subject.
Yeah.
Then is there a lot of AI in swarming?
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Because they have to be autonomous. Your human can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of them are, the robots have intelligence. Some of them, they put cameras, like, you know, on the ceiling facing down, so they
know they're where they are in space.
There's one sort of master brain controlling these robots. But what I saw with these things that we were selling was we were selling these, you know, microcontrollers and, you know, touch screens and stuff that you put on these robots, and they were just super expensive and they weren't very good. And I was playing with my, I think, original iPhone back then.
And, this is a computer.
Right.
This has accelerometers. This has a camera.
Yeah, and GPS. And, like, GPS. The screen was amazing. And,
yeah.
And I was like, well, they were just, you know, smartphones were just starting to sort of take off. And I was like, you know, they're still kind of expensive. You know, I figured, like, at some point, everybody was going to have a smartphone. I was like, well, why can't we use this as the brains for these robots? Like, why are we spending thousands of dollars on these controllers when you could just, like, use your phone?
Wow. You caught a wave, too, because the advent of the smartphone changed everything. Not only were the technologies available, but because they were being produced in mass quantities, the prices went down, the capabilities increased.
Yep.
And it empowered DJI and a whole bunch of companies to do things nobody'd done before.
Right. And not and obviously the prices were coming down on the phones, but the prices, you know, maybe even more importantly for us, were coming down on the components that they were putting in the phones.
Exactly.
So we needed those same sensors in Sphero.
Right.
And yeah, just those MEMS sensors, you know, drastically dropped in price that we could actually use things like that.
It's very smart that you saw that this is about to happen, and you said, "Hey, you know what? This is a new business."
Yeah.
Was Adam at this old company with you, or
no? So the original idea. Well, I, you know, looked up like, "Oh, how do I use a phone to, you know, control these robots?" And I looked online and realized very quickly that not only was nobody controlling robots with smartphones, but nobody was controlling anything physical with a smartphone back then. Which is weird to think about now because
everybody does. That's all.
Yeah,
that's,
I was like at the Crunchies the other night, and like there's like, you know, connected dog bowls, and like, you know, everything is like internet connected. But yeah, so the original idea was just let's control stuff with the phone. I applied to an accelerator called TechStars, and they were like,
"That's
well,
a good accelerator too." Yeah, that's
yeah, it's
one.
Great.
Yeah,
so they. They were like, that's a cool idea, but, you know, we've never done a hardware company. You're a sole founder. Like, there's no way you're going to be able to pull this off. Like,
right.
So I started asking around, and through a mutual friend that also worked at this robotics company, introduced me to Adam. And Adam, like, he, like, didn't even have a phone, like, when I met him.
But he was working on robotics, or?
Yeah, he was actually, he had done some stuff through... through a NASA grant in university. He was just finishing up his physics math degrees.
Yeah.
So his passion, I mean, he's been in robotics, but really around sort of software and that whole world. So it was a good mesh. Like he had done robotic stuff, but he was really strong on the software side.
Right.
I was... you know, had done a lot of programming, but my strength is on the hardware side. So it was a good combination. We got together. My dad he ended up loaning us a couple $1,000s.
So that's great. That's
buy,
so
like,
cool.
Yeah, so we could buy an Android phone because you couldn't. It turned out like, I mean, we're so cutting edge that you couldn't even do what we were trying to do, controlling physical things from your smartphone. Like when I met him, it was like the day after I met him is when Android pushed an Android update to where you could use the serial port profile on
perfect
on Android.
Nice timing. We're talking with Ian Bernstein. He is one of the founders and the CTO now of Sphero. Of course, you know the name. Sphero is an interesting study because here's a company kind of, I don't want to say struggling, but I'll let you tell me how it was going. But, I mean, it was difficult to find a market for something so different and new. And along comes J.J. Abrams, and suddenly you can't keep these things in stock. We're going to talk some more with Ian in just a bit.
Hey, we're going to have more with Ian Bernstein and Sphero in just a second. But first, let me talk about Squarespace, the place to make your next website, a beautiful, professional-looking website. Squarespace brings together the best designers with the best engineers and the best hosting into one package. It's affordable, it's easy to use, and it's going to give you a website that looks just like
like you, like what you want, what you dream of, what you, when you go to bed at night and you think, what would my web space look like? That's Squarespace right there. You'll start with one of these great designer templates. Now, they're beautiful to begin with, but they're very easy to make your own, to customize. If you're a photographer, an artist, a musician, if you've got a business, a restaurant, you can make it look like, you know, your brand. And by the way, every Squarespace site comes with e-commerce, which means that the shopping cart's going to look like your brand too. And you can't say that for most shopping carts. Most of the time, they're kind of an add-on off the side. Your audience, your users kind of know, oh, yeah, I'm now in the shopping cart back in ugly land. Not Squarespace. It's the only site that gives you a shopping cart that looks every bit as good as the rest of your site. All the sites, as I said, state-of-the-art engineering, are mobile responsive. That's really important. In fact, Google will grade you down if your site isn't mobile friendly. Every Squarespace site is, boom, out of the box. When you upload an image, the software behind the scenes gives you 9 different versions. It automatically picks the right one for the size screen, whether it's a 4-inch iPhone SE. See how I threw that in? A 4-inch iPhone SE or a 55-inch TV. It's going to look great. The hosting's great, too, because it's so tightly integrated with the software that a website on Squarespace just never goes down. You can suddenly be the most popular site on the internet, and you're fine. It just doesn't go down. You'll also get a free custom domain name with an annual purchase. That makes you look more businesslike. Definitely do that. And support is wonderful, 24/7 from some of the nicest people in the world. I love Squarespace. You will, too. I want you to go to squarespace.com and try it. It's free to try. But if you decide to buy, I want you to use our offer code, Triangulation, because you'll get 10% off. And they'll go, hey, those Triangulation viewers, they like us. That's a good thing. Squarespace.com. Try it today. I'm telling you, just do it. You'll love it. And when you buy, use the offer code Triangulation for 10% off. Squarespace. You should. Now, back to Sphero.
Our guest is Ian Bernstein. He is the CTO and founder of Sphero. And was originally Orbotics, and I remember seeing it and thinking it was really cool because it was just it was kind of like this newer Sphero, the one that's blinking. It was just a ball by itself. Didn't have the ports, the windows inside, so you didn't know exactly what was going on in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you control it with your smartphone, and you could roll it around, play games. It was very cool. We all played with it a lot. How did you come up with the ball idea? I mean, because that's not what other robots looked like at the time.
Yeah, it was. That was interesting. So we wanted to make physical things you could control.
Right.
We went through all the obvious ideas, right? Like controlling door locks and lights, and we had prototyped a lot of those things. We put a remote starter in my car, and you could like start the car and roll down the windows and stuff from your phone.
How fun. And you're doing this at this point. You don't have investment, right? Except for your dad.
Yeah.
So you're just kind of doing this experimentally, playing with it.
Yeah. And
looking for a product. You're in Techstars at this point, so you're getting feedback from Techstars?
Well, so when we were prototyping these things, we weren't in Techstars.
You hadn't gotten
it. We were applying.
They said you can't do it unless you get a co-founder and you have a product idea and a business plan and all that, right?
Yeah. So I met Adam. We started, got some money. We started prototyping some stuff. We made all these videos, and we started sending it to Techstars. And we reapplied for the Boulder program for the summer of 2010 and ended up getting in. And it was like the first day or two of the program. I mean, we had a list of like 100 different ideas of things that we could build.
Right.
And it was 3 in the morning, and I was like, I just need something simple, like something I could like pull out of my pocket, throw it on the table, and it does something cool. And I don't know like where the hell this idea came from, but Adam was like, what about a marble? And then I thought back to this. So there's somebody sort of in that Beam Robotics community had built this solar-powered robot ball that I'd sort of duplicated when I was probably 14 years old. So I thought back to that, and I was like, what about a robot ball? We're like, I don't know, maybe that could be kind of cool.
You don't need wheels because you are one.
Yeah.
In any direction.
It worked out really well, right? It was like a novel shape,
right,
for a robot. But it also, something that was core to our company, like we're both sort of makers, hackers. We wanted people to be, you know, anything we made had to have an SDK, an API.
Nice.
We wanted people to be creative around the product.
Yeah.
And when we thought about the ball, it was such a blank slate. Like some of our other, well, I mean, there's like door locks and stuff like that. But if we, you know, more on the toy side, if we made like a car, you're kind of stuck with the car.
Right.
And there's not that many things you could do with it. But the ball, it was like, this could be a car, maybe.
Yeah.
It could be a racing game.
Right.
Or like, when we thought of like things that people might do with it, it was just like no end. It was
right.
so easy to just come up with stuff.
Like a sphere, it's infinite. It can goes on and on and on. Yeah.
Yeah. It was good too. Like, I mean, the ball is one of the oldest, you know, maybe the oldest toy
right.
in the world, like thousands of years old.
Kids immediately gravitate towards balls. They just, even at 1 year old, they want to grab them.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean,
so did you already have an idea of how you could move it?
No.
Is that well known? No.
No.
It's not like everybody knows how to move a robot ball. That's simple.
I mean, the traditional way, like the one that I built when I was a kid, sort of used a pendulum-type mechanism mm-hmm. where you have a shaft in the middle of the shell, and then you have a motor on that moving a counterweight.
Right.
And then a second motor to move the weight back and forth.
So it's like almost like in a swing. You're changing the center of balance and...
Exactly.
By rotating. So just as you pump your legs in a swing, right?
Yep.
Yeah. But you don't do that? I thought you did.
No. So, well, the problem with that is you can't. So one of our sort of criteria is we wanted to be able to move in any direction almost instantaneously.
Right.
So we had to design something else. And, I mean, we talked to a bunch of people. We had, like, all kinds of crazy ideas. Like, what if you had, like, water inside the sphere and there was, like, a little... like a robot boat. Like, what would happen if, like, the little robot boat, like, drove over to one side? Would it roll? Like...
So essentially you have to change the center of gravity, right, so it'll roll to balance itself.
Right.
So you're thinking of different ways you can shift the weight of the sphere.
In any
direction.
The
robot boat. didn't do that. That didn't work.
No, I don't think that would work. We actually prototyped one where we took a ball out of an old mouse.
Uh-huh.
And then we had, like, two... sort of like you would have the two little roller wheels in the mouse, but we motorized those so we could move that ball in any direction and then put that in the sphere. And it sort of worked, but it would be hard to make it small.
Right.
And then ended up with the design that we have now.
Are you 3D printing these at the time? Is that how you're prototyping them? You're actually making them?
Yeah. I mean, we didn't sort of in that time frame. So this was like summer 2010. You really couldn't get good 3D printers back
Replicator
then.
Replicator wasn't out yet.
Yeah, they were pretty crude and
right.
like anything.
Or they were
was
really
expensive.
Yeah.
So we did have parts 3D printed, but not by us, and it was expensive.
Yeah. So you had to wait till you had something you thought was going to work.
Yep.
Was there a eureka moment when you or Adam said, "Oh, what about this?" Or
yeah, I think so. We had a. Yeah, there's always like that first like prototype that comes together, you know, for all our products when it's like
right.
Yeah, that is a eureka moment, right? But yeah, it was sort of more of the design we ended up with was sort of like a segue inside of a sphere.
Okay.
So it's actually a little robot with two rubber wheels.
Yeah.
And as you know, the little robot drives up on the inside.
So there's
of the
a robot
shell.
In the robot.
Yeah.
And he's a little like a Segway-like robot, and he'll drive around inside the sphere.
Yep.
You can kind of see it in the new Sphero. I'm glad you put windows in the new Sphero.
Yep.
The Sphero 2, because you can kind of see what's going on. And I like it that you're not hiding it. You're not saying, oh, it's magic. We won't tell you how it works.
We wanted to in the beginning, you know, and then we changed with the Sphero 2.0.
Had anybody done anything like that? I mean, or was this you just invented this out of whole cloth?
I mean, there was, you know, some other robot balls, like I was saying, when I was, you know, that
right.
were sort
but
of
nobody
inspiration.
Nobody done it this way.
Not really, like, I don't know, maybe some hack, I don't know, maybe
right.
some random person.
Was the Segway, an inspiration for this?
Not really. It just kind of, you know, we needed a way to, like, describe what we had built.
Right.
We were, like, you know,
right.
thought of a bunch of
so
stuff.
So you said we can put
sense.
A two-wheel... I'm still trying to understand it because it's on two wheels. It can rotate that way. It can go
right.
forward, backwards. It can't quite go diagonally, but it can rotate and go diagonally pretty quickly.
Yep.
So it gives you the motility inside to go in any, which you want to go in any direction, backward or forward.
Right.
That is pretty, that's a pretty clever idea. Was it you or Adam? Do you know? Or is it mutual?
Yeah, it's probably pretty mutual. I mean, yeah. You know, when you're in Techstars, these accelerators, you're working, you know, 20 hours a day, like 7 days a week. Yeah. So.
Techstars is like a lot of, they call these accelerators or startup incubators where they give you some money, they give you 3 months, and then they give you a lot of mentoring to take a company and kind of get it to the point where it can actually go out and look for funding and start to build the company. And Techstars is one of the very best. It's funny because Paul Graham gave me the same advice. He said, you can't be a solo founder. You've got to find a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I'm going to do it myself. And I ended up, he was absolutely right. It helps a lot, doesn't it, to have two people?
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. Three's too many.
Yeah, it's just good to have somebody to bounce ideas off of, right?
Yeah, two
just,
people are smarter
than you.
Have
those 3 a.m. meetings.
Exactly.
Just like.
Yeah. I ended up marrying my partner, so that's good, so we can meet at any time of the day or night.
Could be good and bad.
Wow. So, okay. So now you got, you're in Techstars. Did you demo it? Did you build it and demo it and say, here, we think we got it?
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty crude. So actually the company back then when we were in Techstars, so we're Sphero now, we were Robotics. We were before that Gearbox.
Gearbox.
So if you search like YouTube for Gearbox, robot ball, that was
cool.
The first.
That was the first prototype, huh?
Yeah. I mean, that's maybe like the second iteration, but that's the one that we built in Techstars that we had for so the last day of Techstars. After the 3 months, you get to do your demo day. Investors come in from all over the country, probably all over the world, and you get to like give your 8-minute investment pitch. And this is like the one that we had.
Here's the ball prototype. Is this it?
Yeah.
Gearbox.me.
That's where it started.
This is
down in
first,
the Techstars bunker.
The first Sphero. I love this. It's kind of.
And we got Star Wars.
I know. A little prophetic there, a little Wookiee watching the ball go.
Forgot about that.
Uh huh. And you're using a smartphone. It looks like an Android device to control this. Is that
I think it was an older Nexus.
Nexus One. S. Yeah, or an S.
So you can see it's like, you know, pretty slow. I was like the only one that could really control it.
But you're using the accelerometer in the phone to steer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty cool. And you can see it's 3D printed.
Yep.
That is, and it worked.
Ish.
Yeah. Ish. But that must have been pretty exciting. Look at that. That must have been pretty exciting when you the first time you got it working.
Yeah.
I love that. What a great feeling. And then what did you see as the market? Did you see it as a toy?
Yeah.
Or a hobbyist thing? Or?
I mean, we're still figuring it out, but yeah, for entertainment. Like we, you know, we figured we'd get a few apps out and we'd open our SDKs and we hoped that people would start building their own apps for it.
Right.
Never. I mean, we've gotten a lot of incredible apps for the product. There's not many that have been, you know, super deep.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, I mean, if you look just on YouTube for, you know, Sphero Hack or something, I mean,
right.
There's just tons of videos
out there.
People have
done a lot of interesting things. Yeah.
Yes. Super, super cool stuff.
Yeah.
And we maybe didn't get quality apps that, you know, everybody wants to download. And there's some of them are actually really fun. But we've taught a lot of people to program.
Right.
That's what we learned. And, that
and was that
evolved.
Kind of your goal, I think, to do that? Or
no, not really. I mean, it's definitely like one of the most satisfying parts of the company because, I mean, we're in about over 5,000 schools now.
That's neat. That's really neat. Yeah.
And kids, I mean, it's like 50-50, like, girls, boys, like just because it's such an approachable
mm-hmm.
product
mm-hmm.
And it's so easy to use, like teachers love it and teaching all kinds of stuff with it.
What's the API look like? It's pretty high level, like go forward, go backward, turn left, turn right.
Yeah, I mean, so you can, you can program it at all levels. So there's a low level API that's maybe a little bit more advanced.
You control the individual wheels and things mm-hmm. like that. Yeah,
and you can go in. I mean, you can control all the PID constants of the control systems. We've tried to allow people to
that's good.
You know, get in deep
neat.
If they want.
Yeah. And it's Wi-Fi, Or is it Bluetooth?
Bluetooth.
It's Bluetooth.
Yeah, so you can connect to your laptop. I mean, people have, you know, we've supported several official SDKs, but people have ported our low-level APIs to, you know, you can program in Node.js or like
really?
HTML or Ruby or,
you know, nice.
You know, obviously iOS or Android.
Was it originally Python or what was the original language that you?
Originally, we were just iOS, Android.
Android.
And then the low-level.
So Java, API. Basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're talking with Ian Bernstein. He's the founder and CTO, co-founder and CTO of, was Gearbox, then Orbotics, but you might know it better as Sphero, the makers of the BB-8 robot. We're going to talk about that, Star Wars. And also this new one, which Ollie, we love. I love Ollie. What a great idea. More to come in just a moment. Triangulation Today brought to you by Wealthfront. You've heard me talk about Wealthfront. I love Wealthfront. What is it? Well, it's the answer to a problem a lot of people have. I hope you have savings. And I hope you have long-term savings. You're putting money away for a rainy day fund, college fund for the kids, maybe a down payment for a new house, maybe just retirement, or maybe all of the above. If you have long-term savings, then you should be investing that money. That's for the best return, but there's a problem there. That takes energy, time, knowledge. You can either do it yourself. And you know what? You probably could do a good job if you put the energy in, but then you got to continue to do it day in, day out, forever. And most people, I did it. I think I invested wisely, but did I rebalance? Did I check at least quarterly? No. Did I maximize my return for minimizing my tax payments? No. Well, you go to an advisor, right? They'll do it. Yeah, they'll do it for a price, 1%, 2%, sometimes 3% of the money you have under an investment advisor. A year. That means that's 3% more you have to earn that year just to break even, not to mention transaction costs, hidden fees. That's ridiculous. And, you know, it's how do you choose a good advisor? There's some good and there's some not so good. If they're so good, why are they working as an advisor? Why aren't they just investing their own money? You might ask that. Here's a better way. Computers. Wealthfront is program trading done by computers. Now, these aren't just any computers. These are computers that have been taught with the best Nobel Prize-winning academic research, the best investment practices by some of the best investment people in the world. They've written a total of 16 books, hundreds of years of experience. People like Burton Malkiel, who wrote The Random Walk Down Wall Street, Charles D. Ellis. These guys really know. But the thing is, they're not managing your money. They put it into a program that does it, and it doesn't just do it every quarter or every month or every day. It's constantly doing it. Doing things like tax loss harvesting to increase your return while minimizing your tax costs. Rebalancing constantly, giving you a chance to play in the market at a level that only the biggest investors get to. And the cost, not 1%, 2%, 3%. How about 0.25% a year? That's it. And there's never any additional fees, no hidden cost, transaction fees, nothing like that. In fact, if you take advantage of our offer right now, your first $15,000 will be free. Free, not 0.25%, but 0% forever. Now, I want you to read about it. I don't want you to just take my word for it, but the website's fantastic. You go right now to wealthfront.com/triangulation. Learn how they're doing it. In fact, you can even get them to answer a couple of questions, and they can generate a custom portfolio, the portfolio they'd start you with. So you can see immediately where your money would be going and how it would be doing. They also do this new thing, a portfolio review. So if you already have a portfolio and you just want to know, am I doing the right thing? They'll tell you what percentage of your portfolio is at risk, how diversified you are, maybe even most importantly, what you're losing to fees and what you should be doing for tax savings. And that's free. This is a great deal. Wealthfront.com/triangulation. At the very least, take advantage of the free stuff. A minimum investment is $500, but do the free stuff first. Get the portfolio review. Get the sample portfolio. Read what they're doing. I think you'll be impressed. I was. Wealthfront.com/triangulation. Join the many Twit viewers who have gotten just really amazing results. Wealthfront. Now's a good time to do it, by the way. Wealthfront.com/triangulation. Our guest is Ian Bernstein. He is with, of course, Sphero. He's the CTO and founder. Not such an old company. 5 years ago at Techstars, you and your partner got the idea for it, created the prototype. Was it an immediate hit out of the box? Was it easy to raise money and all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, no, it's never been easy, especially for hardware. Like, we were the first hardware company to go through an accelerator program, like Techstars. And
hardware's hard.
Yeah, it is.
It's
hard.
A lot harder than software.
It is harder.
You've got to manufacture it. You got to.
It's gotten a lot easier, right?
Yeah.
I mean, with services out there for
it's amazing,
cheap stuff
isn't it?
And 3D printing and like.
You don't have to ever leave San Francisco to connect with a Chinese firm, get a prototype, do the whole thing.
Yep.
They're just there in the San Francisco area. And
yeah. But, I mean, just meeting, you know, when we were in Techstars, like the investors and stuff coming through, most of them had never done hardware investments before.
Right.
So we had some really awesome support early on from Brad Feld, who was one of our mentors in the program through Foundry Group. So
good.
He's always been, you know, whatever, like hardware.
The thing that's interesting about this is if you can break through as a toy, if you can become a crossover and break through as a toy, the sky's the limit, right? Mm-hmm. That's the big crossover. Because as a robot, you know, you've got schools, you've got hobbyists, but it's a much smaller market. But suddenly, if you're the toy, which you were this Christmas, the toy of the year, that's a big, big market. That's a whole different thing.
Yeah, and that's exactly right, right? I mean, we want to appeal to the hobbyists and people that want to program and just, you know, love robots and hack it and things like that. But yes, we want the economy of scale to make this mass market so that we can bring that to more people.
That's a good point. It makes it less expensive too to make them, and new stuff can come along like Ollie. So I remember seeing it and thinking, this is really cool, but I don't know what the hell they're going to do with it. And this is 2012 CES, something like that.
Yep.
And so initially, was it tough going to convince people to buy this thing? Your schools, it sounded like got it right away, right?
Yeah.
And hobbyists.
It was, it was definitely a new type of product.
Right.
You look around now, we're saying everything's phone controlled, but, you know, back then people didn't know it, like that you could control physical things from your smartphone.
Right.
So there was a lot of, you know, especially the first couple of years, there was a lot of education that we had to do, educating the market on, you know, what phone-controlled stuff is, and there's multiple apps, and it's a robot ball, and we had, like, augmented reality stuff, and it was just a lot of explanation. And something that we did that was really smart is, like, the eighth hire in the company was a full-time videographer.
Oh, interesting.
This guy Damon is incredible, and he does up until a couple of years ago.
That is
he did all our videos, but
that is smart. GoPro was smart that way. There was it was kind of a generic thing. Sometimes people say GoPro isn't a product; it's a YouTube channel. That's really smart because then people see it in action. They get it, and they get the kind of the fun of it.
Yep, exactly.
Very clever.
Yeah, when you actually played with it, or.
You see it in the box, you don't know what the hell it's going to do.
Yeah, here's like robot ball.
Okay,
like
robot
what?
Ball. Okay, do I throw it? What do I do with it?
Yep.
Yeah, very neat. So that was a smart move. Was that somebody at Kickstarter who said, you need a videographer or just...
I don't know how that happened, actually. And it kind of seemed a little funny at first. It's like, you know, don't we need, like, marketing or, like, I don't know, other things?
That's the best possible marketing.
Yeah.
See, I think this is what's really interesting about you. And I guess it's generational. But your timing was impeccable, right?
Yep.
And but more to the point, you got on the right train at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
So as the smartphone technology improves, you can take advantage of it. As YouTube emerges and people are using that to market, you saw right away that the value of doing something like that.
Yep.
And then you went to CES and Macworld. That's not cheap. That's a big expense for a startup.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, we went the first time in 2011.
Wow.
So not that long after Techstars, and the product came together like a week before CES, and we almost pulled out. Like, I was talking to our CEO. So when we were in the Techstars program, one of our mentors in that ended up helping us out like a few days a week. And after Techstars ended, he joined as our CEO as an experienced business person.
Nice.
We had this. I remember this conversation. We just were like, man, I don't know if this thing's going to even work. Like, we're paying I don't know,
100,000, 200,000 for a booth. And
well, you know, it was a smaller booth.
Still, they're expensive. It's not.
Oh yeah. Well, it'd fly everybody out there and
right. Cost us $150,000 just to cover CES, so I can imagine what it costs to be.
Oh yeah, it's ridiculous.
An exhibitor. In fact, here's video from this is actually a fan shot video from that 2011 CES.
That's awesome.
In your little booth on those, you put together those rubber.
So the rubber thing. So we had like some surface and it didn't work for the product.
You need grip.
So this is like total scrappy stuff, right? So.
Those are for weight rooms, so you don't throw the weights on the ground.
So our CEO, Jim Booth, and our CEO, Paul, were out there, like, the day before, and I think we had to hang back to, you know, try to get the product, you know, finished.
Oh, my God.
And the surface didn't work, so it was the day before CES started, and they were like, oh, my God, like, what the hell are we going to do? This thing isn't driving on the surface.
On shag carpet.
So they had to go to, like, Sports Authority and buy, like, 300 pounds.
I recognize these.
Of these things. And, like, find the taxi and, like, get it in, and, you know, you have issues with, you know, the union. Like, you know, you get 300 pounds.
Sorry, we got to move that. That's Teamster's job right there.
And these shells at that point were all hand-machined, hand-lathed out of clear acrylic.
Wow.
So I would, you know, and they were pretty brittle. Because they weren't molded, you know, the second day of CES, all the shells had cracked and all we had left were clear ones, but we didn't want to use the clear ones.
Oh,
so I had to
go
7 in the morning behind the New York, and spray paint in the alleyway a bunch of more shells.
Oh, man.
For like, so
but you know what? You
CES.
Did the right thing because a guy named Patrick Norton came by the booth and said, hey, this is Sphero. This is pretty cool. I want to give you a demo. This is also CES. 2011. This is TechZilla. I remember this.
It's going to be a while before this one comes out. It's going to be under $100. It's going to be out for the holidays in 2011. But this is a robot that you can control for now from your iPad, from your iPhone, from any iOS device, or later on from an Android. And you know what it is? You roll it around. That's it.
go ahead.
So that Sphero is actually, there's a clear rubber band holding it together.
Oh, man, that you spray painted over.
We didn't. I don't know if you can see it on there.
Wow. And the paint's flaking off, by the way.
And then in that back part where the TV is behind him, our intern was in there for 4 days because the tires wear too much. So after one sort of battery cycle, it would like gunk up on the inside. So he would have to open them up and take alcohol swabs and clean it all out and like hook the batteries to this big, you know, RC car battery charger because we didn't have the new induction charging stuff working. And he'd hand us out like a new one.
Holy cow. A little peek behind the curtain. And you were telling people at this point, Christmas this year. So like in a year, basically, we'll have it out.
Yep.
Did you make it?
We did. We shipped like 400 units for that Christmas. We didn't meet all our pre-orders. I was there like a month in China, and oh man, we had like shipping issues. I remember like we caught something; they were all boxed up. We had a lot more than 400 that were supposed to go out, and our engineer was like, "Oh my god! Like we discovered this bug in the firmware that or calibration or something," and he figured out how to write an algorithm that would figure out the serial numbers of which ones were probably bad. So like the night before, like all myself and a bunch of the people at the factory, project managers and stuff, like had to cut open every single box and look at the serial number and match it to this huge sheet of and pull out the ones that we thought were bad. And then we shipped them off. And we ended up, you know, a lot of people had pre-ordered and wanted them for Christmas. So you know, we felt bad, so we ended up making a bunch of t-shirts and cards and stuff and sending them to people.
Would you have done Kickstarter if it had been around at that time? Would you have thought of that kind of thing, crowdsourcing it?
I think so. You know, Indiegogo, Kickstarter, I think it's really cool.
Nowadays, that's somebody with an idea like this, that's probably the first place they would go.
Yeah, it's a good validation, right?
Right. Christmas 2011, you've got 400. You sell 400. Christmas 2012, is it ramping up by now?
Yeah, company was actually doing well.
Good.
And yeah, I was doing well enough that we were able to, you know, raise more money and, right. and work on a version two of the product. And in version two of the product is when it really started to gain traction and take
that's,
off.
That's the Sphero 2 here?
Yep.
Yeah. What was new in Sphero 2?
So we did, you know, on the technical side, like we put better encoders on the motors and things like that to make the driving a lot more precise. It was like twice as fast, so it was, you know, more interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. The LEDs were brighter, and we improved the app experience. And that's sort of something that ended up leading into, you know, to BB-8 actually.
Yeah, I really want to hear the story of how that came out. I should mention there's a Sphero Spark edition.
Yep.
For schools that people should know about. This is a really great idea for parents who want to teach STEM and schools that want to teach robotics and programming. And you really facilitate that. Mm-hmm. And what's great is you're very open about all of, you know, this is as open as a commercial product can be. So I like that because you have the toy side, which is traditionally a very closed mass market thing, and you have this too. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of living your original intention to really make this something that everybody can get into.
Yeah, I mean that's how I learned about robots, right?
Yeah,
and we get letters from kids at schools and stuff and all kinds of cool stuff. So we know we're inspiring kids, which is awesome.
And it's I think you nailed it when you said kids like balls. There's something about a ball that makes it very approachable. It's not creepy like a bug. It's got a personality, and of course, no more personality than in BBA. Well, we're going to talk about how that all came about in just a second. Ian Bernstein is our guest. He is the CTO and co-founder of Sphero, the amazing robotic ball.
This episode of Triangulation, we'll get back to Sphero in just a bit, Ian, but this episode is brought to you by a great company called Prosper. I've told you about Prosper before. They're a peer-to-peer lending marketplace. So what they do is they create a market bringing people with money to lend. People are investing in you, basically, with people who need to borrow, like you and me. And they broker that transaction. And what do you get? Well, you get up to $35,000 in as few as 5 days at a low fixed rate. So you know exactly what your payments are going to be. This is such a good deal that in fact, I would do it right now just to pay off any credit card debt you have. It guarantee you, you know, you're just going to cut the payments massively. In fact, if you ever have gone, as I have, to a credit counselor and said, you know, I think I had $30,000 worth of credit card debt. The first thing they do is say, let's consolidate all your credit card debt into a lower rate loan. This is the way to do it. $35,000 in as little as 5 days. Get that credit card debt off your back. You could also use it to fix up your house, plan a vacation, anything you want. It's your money. But start at prosper.com/triangulation. You'll see how easy it is to get a quote. This will not affect your credit score, by the way. Prosper.com/triangulation. Find out how much you can borrow, what the rate would be, then you decide. And just compare it to how much you have in credit card debt. I wish this had existed when this would have been a great solution. Prosper.com/triangulation. Peer-to-peer lending. It's all the rage. And you got to try it right now. Prosper.com/triangulation. Now, let's get back to Sphero.
We're back with Ian Bernstein and Sphero. It's hard to say Sphero. Sphero. So you've got this great thing. It's cool. How did the J.J. Abrams connection happen?
So something that happened with Sphero 2.0 is we kind of had this thesis that we wanted to make a Sphero yours, and that you wouldn't want somebody else's Sphero, you wouldn't want a new Sphero, you wouldn't want to trade Spheros because your Sphero was yours. And so a couple of months after Sphero 2.0 came out, we released a very major upgrade to the app where we added a backstory.
Oh, neat.
Hey, like, where does Sphero come from?
Who is this thing?
Yeah.
Not what, but who?
Yeah. We had Brent Spiner, like, narrate this
nice.
This intro cinematic, and, you know, Sphero came from this planet Spheron, and he came, you know, he had some issues with some Tetrons, and he got sent to Earth, and he comes crashing through your window, and at the end of the video, he lands on your bed, and you get to name your Sphero.
Oh, neat.
And then you could go on different missions, and you could upgrade your Sphero and get cores, and with the cores you could get different upgrades and different tricks and stuff for your Sphero, and all that was stored inside Sphero itself. And when we released that update, we saw our engagement go up like 6 times.
Yeah. You personified it. It's very interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. Creating a character for Sphero versus just like a robot ball.
Yeah.
So this was sort of like end of 2013. Fast forward like maybe 6-7 months, we heard about this Disney Accelerator that was going to be happening with Techstars and Disney. And we're like, well, you know, this characterization thing is working. We want to learn how to do that even better, and who is the best people in the world to learn
Nobody
that from
better.
Would be,
yep.
you know, Disney, and they yep. own Pixar and Marvel and Lucas right. and all these great companies. So we went to, you know, we went there to create a better, even stronger character out of Sphero. And the first week of the program, we had a one-on-one meeting with Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, and in the meeting, he pulls out his phone, and he's like, hey, you guys got to, like, check this out. And he starts flipping through set photos from Episode 7. And, I mean, there was, like, no leaked photos from Episode 7, the movie coming out. We're like, oh, my God. Like, like, look, trying to, like, memorize, like, all the characters and stuff. Like, what are we seeing here? and he gets to this picture of BB-8, and he's like, this kind of... You know, this kind of looks like Sphero.
Did it look like that? I mean, did it look like a BB-8?
The picture?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
So they imagined it being this kind of sphere.
Yeah, so apparently J.J. Abrams has sort of come up with the idea for this sort of form factor at the end of 2013.
Interesting. Was he aware of Sphero?
I don't know.
Huh.
I like to think
not
so.
I think he must have been. I think he must have been. I mean, why would you come up with a robot that's a ball, unless you've seen how mobile the Sphero is.
Yeah.
It's not the first thing I would have thought of.
So, you know, we don't know. I haven't talked to JJ personally, but yeah.
So Iger's showing you this and saying, what did he say? He said, that looks like your thing. Did he say, would you like to work together?
Well, he's like, you know, you think you guys can make something like this? And it turned out that we had maybe 4 months earlier experimented with putting accessories on top of Sphero.
Like the head.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't a head, like it was like a hat.
Hat head, what's it? But you knew that. So how do you do that? It's a magnet?
I mean, we like to say it's the Force.
Okay, of course. It's midichlorians, but no, really. Yeah, we don't want to destroy any images, but you could tell when you take it off. This is the one I gave my son for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So you could tell that's a magnet holding it on.
Yeah.
And the head moves, obviously, because as the ball's moving, the head has to stay on top.
Right.
So had you figured out, I guess if you figured out how to with a hat, you could do it with a...
Yeah, so we ended up, you know... We decided to do this Disney Accelerator like a week before the program started.
Wow.
So Adam and I moved to LA.
You're either the smartest guy in the world or the luckiest guy in the world. Wow. Good timing.
Yeah. I mean, we hoped this would happen, and you know, that's why we did the program. But yeah, we ended up making one that week because we had or that night. I mean, we had all our equipment out there. We had all our 3D printers.
Hey, Bob, so. When would you like it? Tomorrow?
Yeah, we sent him a video that night. We put on some Star Wars music.
Oh, he must have been impressed.
Yeah.
And what's timely is that what's a nice happenstance is that JJ didn't want to do CGI robots. He wanted mm-hmm. real physical actors in the scene.
Yep.
And so he's got to solve a tough engineering problem. How do you make that so that it's real?
Right.
Not to mention 3 feet tall.
Yep.
So you said, here, we got it.
Yeah.
Did you say we can make it bigger?
We thought about it. It was, it is not an easy...
It doesn't scale naturally, huh?
Kind of, but it's a very challenging problem, and we... You know, we had some emails back and forth with the creature shop that you know built the BB-8 for the movies,
right.
And then after all the shooting was done, they had some time to go back and make the working one that they had on the.
Oh, so you probably NDA'd on a lot of this stuff, so but tell me you can. No, so when they're shooting the movie, it wasn't a fully functional.
Yeah, so there's an article on StarWars.com with this creature shop, and they say they had like six or seven different models of it. Like some of them were like puppeteered, and some of them were like close-up shots. They had animatronic heads and stuff, but they said they didn't have a fully functional, working one until afterwards.
So that famous demo.
Yeah.
When we saw it, everybody went crazy. Yeah. Did they mention Sphero in that demo? I can't remember. I don't think so.
Sort of vaguely. Like, Kathleen Kennedy was like, sort of mentioned Bob Iger finding some technology or something.
Okay.
But yeah, it was, it's a lot of work. We wanted to focus on bringing the most authentic.
Yeah.
BB-8 that we possibly could to people and telling the story of who BB-8 is, several months before the movie even came out. People kind of learn about this character.
Yeah, we bought this before the movie came out. Yep. Yeah.
So, yeah, it was really cool to be able to use a robot as a medium to tell about a character and about a little bit about a story. but, yeah, that prop shop, those guys that was a lot of work, and those guys did an incredible job of making that big one.
Well, you did build a full-size BB-8, didn't you? Did you guys build it, or they did?
They did. We have a version of our own.
Did they use the same technology, the same...
I'm not sure, actually.
Yeah.
What's inside of theirs, yeah.
Yeah.
Ours is... The point of ours was a life-size version of our product.
Right.
So even, our life-size one doesn't have all... It's a perfect replica of the small one. We even have all our FCC certification numbers
and
stuff.
The CE stuff here and all this.
On the big one.
So what are the challenges of actually making this bigger?
It's, materials. It's really heavy. You need some...
Yeah, it must weigh 100 pounds.
You need a lot of force for the head.
Right.
It's a little dangerous.
Because this thing isn't going to be... It's light on this, but if it's full size, it's going to be a little bit bigger. And if it flies off...
Yeah, that's not bad to happen.
Now, did you approach them about a licensing deal? How did you get to make this as a toy?
So it came through the accelerator. So we were, we moved to LA. We were working out of the Disney by their in Glendale at their offices there, and Techstars. Well, Disney was really good about getting the companies in the accelerator program to connect with some. Some team within Disney or their other properties. So they had people full time at the accelerator, sort of helping you connect to the right people. And, they connected us with Lucas and,
it's a nice connection.
Yeah. It worked out very well.
Yeah. They took an investment in you too, a small investment in you, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's probably part of the deal. If you can make a lot of money, we want to make a lot of money on it. You couldn't keep these in stock. I mean, I ordered mine, and it took me a few months to get it. I was glad I ordered it when I did.
Yeah.
These sold out immediately, right?
We had a lot of people in China trying to...
Cranking them out.
Yeah.
How many did you sell?
We're not saying an actual number, but one public number, we sold over 1 million robots in 2015.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
That's pretty exciting.
And it's... it's exciting. I mean, we're robot people, right? Adam and I are roboticists, and we, we're working on a lot more sophisticated things now.
Because of this, you can, right?
Right, and it's a great approach coming from, a lot of roboticists make sophisticated robots coming from more of the engineering, utility side. We're looking at these from the personality characterization side first.
Yeah. That was smart because a ball doesn't really have any character unless you kind of glue it on. So that was really smart. I love Ollie. How did you come up with the idea for Ollie? Ollie is so cool.
Yeah, so Ollie, I mean, we looked at how people were using Sphero, and everybody liked the boost button and going fast. We were like, well, maybe we can make something really fast and strong, and that was the inspiration behind Ollie. We actually cut open a Sphero and 3D printed some bigger wheels, and that was the first iteration in one night. Again, that's sort of the eureka moment. We uh, drove it around the office, and we sort of hit these jumps that we were using for Sphero and got like 3 feet of air. Like, well, that's pretty cool.
I love the jumping. I love the jumping. I think that's so cool. There's your videographer with his Steadicam running alongside. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's, that scene at the beginning when we're driving, they were in like Moab and they accidentally drove it off this like 200-foot cliff.
Oh.
And it like bounces down and it still worked.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. It's just fun. It's just satisfying to just, you know, crash into stuff.
It really is. And you're using the nubby material that you offer that for the Sphero too now. So there's traction and it can go in a variety of places.
Yep.
So cool. So what's next?
Our mission at Sphero is to put a robot in every home, right? I mean, it's going to happen. I don't know if it's 10 years. I don't know if it's 50 years.
Do you see yourself as doing companion robots and that kind of robot, like a robot, a functional, useful robot as opposed to a toy?
Yes. Yeah. But coming at it, we want to create a character.
Yeah.
We don't want to create,
I think you have to. Otherwise,
vacuum.
It's scary. Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a robot that vacuums, but it's not a robot vacuum.
It's personified. Yeah. Yeah. So do you have a bunch of them in the R&D labs?
No, we're working on some fun stuff. You'll have to wait and see.
I'm not going to get my Bob Iger moment where you're going to show me some pictures, huh? All right. Okay. That's cool. Really, really neat stuff. Sphero, Sphero.com. And I kind of like the Ollie even more. It's so much fun to play with the Ollie. I just love it.
Yeah.
But it's as much a toy as it is a programming thing, right?
Yeah. And you need, if you have the right space and you got, creative to make some jumps and stuff. I mean, I play, we go to shows and stuff and it's so fun. I don't even want to talk to people. I just like to play.
It's fun. It's really, really fun.
Yeah.
And of course, BB-8 is a lot of fun, too, especially the patrol mode. I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
Was that something you had planned ahead of time, or did that come up later?
Because
almost an autonomous mode, right?
Right. And we wanted, he's a droid, right?
Right.
He should act like a droid. Droids should be able to patrol. So,
right.
He has a lot of personality when you're...
Yeah, he makes sounds and does things. And
yeah, he moves
actually,
around.
Does he make sounds or is it my imagination?
So the sound actually comes out of your phone.
Okay. And I love it that you can project. Yeah, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Of course, that's on your phone too. But that's all of these are really cool ideas that you really made this a droid. This is, as you say on your website, this is the droid you're...
And like our other products, he's continuing to get better. I mean, we have a lot of stuff in the pipeline that will continue to update it and add new features.
So you can get better in software, in other words.
Yep.
Yeah, push out some.
Yeah, I mean, just like Sphero, the app that you download today is completely different than the app that you got at launch.
Right.
BB-8 will continue to evolve, and we're always adding new things. And
that's where the tight integration of hardware and software is so great. It's so important. It's an ARM processor in there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A4?
It's a Cortex M4.
M4. I mean. So that's fairly... You got some smarts in there. How much RAM, how much memory is in there? Do you know offhand?
I think it's 32K of RAM, and we have like 256K of
firmware.
Flash.
Yeah. Yeah. Somewhat limited what you can do in there, but since you've got the phone...
Yeah.
All you really have to do is be able to receive commands and act on them.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of sophisticated stuff going on in there to, combine our sensor fusion and get, roll, pitch, yaw out of that and drive the motors. It's not an easy problem.
No, that's interesting. Yeah, it's kind of like flying a quadcopter. It's got to do a lot of real-time calculations just to stay afloat.
Yep.
Ian, really nice to meet you.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm really thrilled that you're doing so well, and I can't wait to see. And who knows, maybe in our future, a Sphero companion robot just hanging out with us. Oh, this is a dream here, a floating makeup selfie, my selfie bot. You're going to do that? Floating. These are ideas that you've got in the Sphero labs here. Look at that. That's not yours. Is that yours?
Yeah.
It is? You're gonna
it's
do
from
that?
Sphero.
Yeah. It is from Sphero. We actually this was an April Fool's.
However,
there was a company like
doing something like this. I know.
Yeah, and they sent me a message like when this video came out. They're like,
it's not a joke.
They said they were like freaking out because they're like, they're a small startup, and they're like, oh my god, these guys are like 2 years ahead of us. Like they are. They've like already figured this out. Like they beat us to market, and then they realized like it was just April Fools. But yeah, I think I saw those guys at CES fly.
That's so funny.
It was funny because they're like, did they like secretly like figure out what we were doing? Because their robot looks exactly like the Celtibot.
Great minds. What can I say?
Yeah,
Ian, thanks for joining us. I appreciate you coming up, and it's so cool to see all the new stuff. Now I have to give Michael back his BB-8. He said you have to take good care of BB.
Biebs,
the little Biebster. thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here. We do Triangulation. This is a pre-record, but normally we do it 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC every Monday. So tune in because it's always engaging, enlivening, and usually ensmartening, if that's a word. You can always watch after the fact, too. On-demand audio and video of all of our shows is available at our website, including this one, twit.tv/TRI. If you go to youtube.com/twit, you can see the directory of all the shows. Everybody has their own channel. There's also twit bits there. Our reviews, for instance, including our original review of the BB-8. I think Mike Elkin did that one, are in a new review playlist, so you can see them all. And, of course, you can subscribe because it's a podcast. So use your favorite podcast app or one of our twit apps. We're on every platform, iOS, Android, Roku, Windows Phone. Yeah, there's five Twit apps on Apple TV now. Wow. Thanks to all of our just kind of independent fans who've created those. The guys are doing a great job. And thanks to you for joining us. I'll see you next time on Triangulation.